welcome to your most recent edition of Tech Law 10. This is Eric Sinrod, a partner at Duane Morris LLP, on a very foggy day here in San Francisco, and I'm about to turn it over to my erstwhile colleague Jonathan Armstrong from our London office to hear some thoughts. Jonathan, I understand you've been out and about like usual at a conference, so you have something to share with us.
Yes, I do, yeah, and greetings to all. It's from a very cold UK, very cold indeed at the moment. And it was raining, unfortunately, in Italy last week, where I spoke at the Università di Bergamo, apologies for the pronunciation, New York State Bar Association joint conference on fashion in Bergamo on Friday, which was a magnificent event. I talked a little bit about compliance issues for the fashion industry. And it seems to me that they're getting many and varied and more varied and more numerous. And some of the issues are obviously common to any business that makes or distributes anything at all. One of the issues that struck me particularly that I'm seeing more of across my desk is the need for enhanced due diligence in the supply chain for reasons like bribery or in the fashion industry to prevent child labor, or because of these increasing areas of concern we've had over safety with these fires in Asian garment factories, for example. And it seemed to me that there's a real challenge here in that just as businesses get rightly more aggressive in looking at what their supply chain is, then the countries where these goods are manufactured develop more, and part of their development process is often enhanced rights for individuals and privacy rights and so on. So just as you're trying to go down the supply chain and say to your suppliers, we don't want you to employ anybody under 14 and prove to us who's under, give us details and prove to us that these people are over 14, then equally those individuals are being more concerned about passing that data over, which ensures compliance. And it seemed to me one of the reasons was because privacy and data protection law is being exported. But another reason is that many of these countries that are sources of cheap labor for manufacturing textiles, for example, are also sources of cheap labor for outsourcing, for people wanting to locate call centers there or customer contact centers. I just rang to get my credit card and unblocked, and it's clear, fairly clear to me where the destination was and who answered that call and where they were located. And of course, people who outsource banking transactions and so on also try and insist on a higher level of data protection and privacy laws to protect that data. So it seemed to me we were in a sort of interesting state at the moment where there is this move towards greater compliance, but compliance is also getting more challenging. And, we see it in those areas. We see it in the bribery and corruption space. And we see it in other strange areas like the import of materials, where we're seeing increasingly, because the world's become flatter, Chinese importers, Chinese exporters, for example, import goods into Europe, but they don't quite have the same attitude to compliance, and they also don't challenge compliance decisions, so the bar, as a result, raises higher for US and European businesses. So aside my talk, I think the other concerns for the fashion industry generally are things like selling online, and there were some very interesting statistics about how selling of fashion, just as selling of other goods, is increasing online. But the challenges that that brings, obviously in areas like counterfeiting, but also in areas like the distance selling rules in Europe, which make it very hard to sell stuff over the internet. I know that you and I have talked about this before, but for example, there are high return rates of some types of clothing because people want to try them on at home, and they have rights in Europe to send goods back. It's interesting that the European Commission have tried to legislate and give a statutory time limit for returning goods, but some of the evidence at the conference seemed to be that that's had the opposite effect, that U.S. consumers are actually better treated than EU consumers. The U.S. obviously hasn't intervened to legislate on the whole, and Europe has. So it seemed to me that it was an interesting discussion about some of these complexities. I don't think the conference reached any conclusions on any of this, but it was very interesting to see this sharing of minds, if you like, of those people involved in fashion law from the US, from Europe, places like Italy, Poland, obviously the UK, and how some of the issues are exactly the same, but some of the solutions are different. I wonder if you had any thoughts on that, Eric.
I do. You know, you've been using the word compliance quite a bit, and I imagine you picked up some fashion tips, so I'm deeply concerned, Jonathan, that you're now going to be the fashion police. And I know that we're going to be getting together in Washington, D.C. Soon for several days, so I'm very, skittish about how you're going to critique my wardrobe. But on a more serious note, you bring up some important issues about the supply chain in terms of child labor and safety issues. And, not only should companies be mindful for, real reasons to assure compliance and protection in those areas, but it's also just practically important from a PR standpoint, because companies can get a real black eye if it turns out that in their chain, for example, there is underage labor or their manufacturing facilities that are being used are not safe. So just from a public relations standpoint and ultimately, the value of the company or the share price of the company can go down if there's a negative public perception. And then you point out that in the EU, there sounds like there's some rules in terms of requiring the ability for customers to return, fashion items if they're not satisfied. I think you're right. I'm not sure there's actually legislation on that here in the United States. But a number of, very successful companies do allow for that anyway, so that you have a good customer, you have a good user experience, and so that if you purchase shoes or a dress or, other type of clothing online and you're not happy, you have 30 days or some period of time to return, and ultimately that could inure to the benefit of the company, even though not legally required, because there's a lot of customer goodwill and people want to go back to that site. And ultimately, even if they don't like the first item they purchased, they're going to keep going back, and ultimately they will make purchases that stick. So those are my several additional thoughts. It sounds like you had, a productive conference there. I'm disappointed I wasn't invited so I could learn the fashion tips and become like Zoolander, but what can I say?
Isn't that a great film?
It is. Maybe we'll start doing a film law 10 or just, film critique 10 weekly as well.
And maybe we'll get some Blue Steel photographs taken when we're together in a couple of weeks. Blue Steel his?
I think our audience would really appreciate that. Anyway, so this has probably been about 10 of your Tech Law 10, and now we're getting into a little bit of a comedy 10. But this is Eric Sinrod from Duane Morris. You can reach me at ejsinrod@duanemorris.com. As you know, you can find us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook. Jonathan, will you please do your Zoolander wrap-up?
Yes, I will, and thanks ever so much for listening. This is Jonathan Armstrong, jparmstrong@duanemorris.com. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll speak to you in a week or so.
Thank you, bye-bye.
What would you say your trademark is, if you have one?
Well, I guess the look I'm best known for is Blue Steel.